Spirit Husband, Chapter 6, Lightworker Seminar. When Willow checked her instant messenger to see if she had any messages from Wesley, she noticed one from her bobblehead Jesus group. Lightworker Kazu, this is your lightworker trainer Kazu. I want you to attend a seminar tonight. The town is only a few hours away. I want you to meet some very special people tonight, Lightworker Willow. Willow, that sounds really interesting, Kazu, but I have to work tonight. Lightworker Kazu, this is really important, Willow. Call in sick. We will pay you a $500 consultation fee and even reimburse you for a rental car if you come. We also have a hotel room reserved at the hotel where we are holding the seminar. Willow, you are making an offer I can't refuse. I'll cancel my shift and be there with bells on. Send me directions or a GPS link. Lightworker Kazu, here are the directions for you, Willow. Safe driving. Don't forget, honey, we are covering your hotel room, too. When Willow arrived, Kazu, a diminutive Asian girl, introduced her to a tall blonde man, who appeared to Willow to be about 30 years of age and about 6'4 in height. Lightworker Willow, this is our national lightworker, Heinrich Daz, and his sister, Sigluna Sophia. Daz is actually the name of the entity he represents. Willow's heartbeats became more rapid, her pupils enlarged, and her head swam. Heinrich gently clasped Willow's hand, bowed, and then kissed it. Down, girl. Enough already, Willow said to herself. You are married to Jesus. I, Heinrich, am happy to formally meet you. Lightworker Kazu has told me great things about you. You may call me Heini. If my master Ram Daz desires to speak with you this evening, you may call him Daz. He in turn introduced Willow to his sister. Fräulein, please meet my younger sister Sigluna. Sophia is the symbiote of Sigluna. Sigluna, slender, blonde-haired, voluptuous, and just a smidgen over 6 feet and 2 inches in height, was exceptionally beautiful and alluring. She nodded gently to Willow and curtsied. Glad to meet you, Fräulein Willow. Both Heinrich and Sigluna possessed beautiful, entrancing, musical voices. While they attempted to speak in a cultured German accent, to the discerning ear, their enunciation was, at best, muddled and not always consistent. The reason for this was that neither of them were German, and not even of Earth, even though they had both spent thousands of years on the planet in various locations, while not away visiting other bases or their home solar system. Their accents were striking, but a modification of their natural Nordic voices. Their symbiotes, when they spoke, were much the same. Daz and Sophia's accents were a contrived and inaccurate, often lilting Middle European sound. Responding politely to Sigluna's greeting, Willow smiled and exclaimed, "As am I." "Oh, God," said Willow to herself. "I know my secret garden is tingling for Heinrich, but I am reacting to Sigluna in the very same way. I am not a homosexual. This is weird. You be careful, girl." Nordics hosted demonic entities in a parasitic fashion, in trade for providing homes for these dark corporeal beings. They could focus that demon's powers for their own use. Nordic beings could channel these demons in the common way, such as having them speak through them, or they could use that demon's particular expertise and wield it as a magical force. Female Nordics sought sexual and manipulation demons as companions, so they could use that energy to improve their sexual capacities and improve their captivation/psi-power mind control techniques. By harnessing the demon's power, they directly and powerfully influenced and ensorcelled people in the world around them, using their demonically enhanced deception techniques and erotic activity as tools to quickly seduce and dominate humans to their will. Male Nordics did not seem to have the natural affinity, as did the females of their race, to use manipulative or sexual demons to control other humans, but possessed the ability to use certain demons to gain elemental powers or enhance natural abilities such as strength, speed, dexterity, and intellectual capacity. That is not to say male Nordics were unable or unwilling to use a sexual demon to sidecharm a human for their personal pleasure. Male Nordics only had minimal ability in this skill, while the females of their race quickly gained incredible aptitude to captivate men or women in this manner. Most of the males had a sex demon, but just let them affect others naturally, rather than focus the skill repeatedly to increase that power. Not long after they had arrived, they rattled their ice-filled crystal cocktail glassware and shared small talk. A tall, photogenic man with an athletic build, with the name tag Finnegan pinned to his uniform, stood discreetly by the nearby private wet bar that came with their special conference room and kept them supplied with drinks. He tried, almost successfully, not to stare at Sigluna, who had eyed him appreciatively a few times herself. Kazu announced, "We are happy to pay you the consultation fee, Lightworker Willow," as she pulled 5 crisp $100 bills from her patent leather Lady's Executive credit card wallet and handed them to her, "and cover your expenses, but we are the only people you will meet tonight. The Galactic Federation of Light welcomes you." Sigluna burst out, "Willow, why didn't you tell me? My ascended master Sophia just whispered to me that you have met Jesus Sunanda." Willow replied, "Until recently I didn't know there was a Jesus Sunanda. Actually, I have met 2 Jesus guys. One has sandy chestnut hair and reddish bronze and blonde highlights. He and his robes glow. He says the other Jesus I have met is the fake Jesus."
"Schweinhund!" shouted Heinrich. "That Jesus of Nazareth, he is the fake Jesus."
The bobblehead Jesus group, although neither Kazu or the Nordic being Heinrich or his sister had any intention of informing Willow during the evening's festivities, was actually a front organization used for recruiting by the Nordics for their Galactic Federation of Light and Ashtar Command associations. Sigluna cried in a horrified German accent, "You dasn't believe him, Willow. I mean the fake Jesus." She fanned herself with a tiny Japanese fan before continuing, "I am the executive secretary for Sunanda Jesus. I will vouch for him. I have served him faithfully since 1918. I have attended him in every way since then, on tours, with his secretarial work, in his kitchens, on his vacations, and even in his emperor-sized bed. And if I wasn't required to share him, as he has hundreds and hundreds of consorts, I would never leave his side. And I am proud of it, Willow. Very proud."
1918. Wow, Sigluna. You are the most beautiful woman I have ever met. How can you be so beautiful? How can you be more than 100 years old and look so gorgeous and young?
Why, thank you, Willow. But I haven't been 100 years old in thousands of years. We Nordics are just naturally beautiful, lean, muscular, highly intelligent, and live hundreds and hundreds of times longer than humans."
"You're not human?"
"Heavens no, Willow. I am a Nordic. We look human. Well, better than any human, if I say so myself.
Heinrich chimed in. We literally come from a land far, far away and from a place long, long ago. We have small underground facilities on a few nearby planets, but we literally hail from across the galaxy, a sector you Earthlings call the Pleiades.
Shocked, Kazu chimed in. When did you meet Jesus, Sunanda, Willow?
Willow began talking with her hands as her words swiftly tumbled out, like little, wiry acrobats. Back when I joined the group, after I listened to your video about Bobblehead Jesus Group, Kazu, I paid the $99 for the crystal bobblehead Jesus that would empower my prayers. When I received it in the mail and prayed the prayers you had instructed in the video, Jesus visited me right away. He accepted my vow to be celibate in his service, promised to enlighten me, and said that if I did well, one day he might allow me to become a member of his inner sanctum.
Oh, Velo, exclaimed Sigluna, shocked the most prominent emotion on her angelically beautiful face. That is amazing. I am truly happy for you. I promise I won't be jealous.
She stood, hugged Willow, and said, I will be a good sister to you, I promise.
Willow blushed. Kazu asked, You didn't say what color hair he had.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Willow brushed her hands on her jeans, smiled, and continued, I'm just a little overwhelmed right now.
Understandable, Fräulein Willow, said Heinrich, as he nodded gently and sipped his scotch.
Blonde, a very light blonde, his hair was long, past his shoulders, and it gleamed when he moved and when the lights hit it. He was wearing the same clothing as Heine and Sigluna, the blue silk, skin-tight jumpsuit that molds to your contours. It had the same dark blue trim on the collars and at the hems of the sleeves and the bottom of the pants legs.
Blonde hair, you say, Sister Willow? Sigluna nodded. That means he was holding court in his German castle. He always has blonde hair when he is present there. My favorite is when he is in his citadel in Antarctica. There he has the most beautiful white hair with silver and purple highlights. He looks like the character Geralt of Rivia from the Witcher gaming series, except he is much more handsome and sculpted than that Witcher character. When I am with him in Antarctica, I literally beg, steal, and kill to win the right among his consorts to serve him in his bedchamber. I, a Nordic woman, legendary for our sexual prowess, unlike our dull males, are revered across the galaxy for this trait. Every time I feel like a virgin schoolgirl when he allows me to give him sex.
Good gods, woman!
Snapped Heinrich loudly, splashing himself and Sigluna with $100 per bottle Lagavulin
Aile
single malt scotch. Following an emphatic gesture,
I do not wish to endure any more garish tales, Sigluna, about your erotic exploits in his service. My best guess, sister dear, is that Jesus, Sunanda,
probably doesn't want you foaming at the mouth about it either, especially in front of those who do not serve as ambassadors of the Federation of the Light. Like myself, he is very proper about what is said in front of those he terms the ignorant masses. He has a reputation, moral and spiritual, to keep up. For his peasants and lower servants, you know, Sigluna. And your mooning and jabbering will do nothing to encourage his ignorant masses about his holiness.
Excuse me, my frigid and overly protective brother, pouted Sigluna sarcastically. I get the message. Back to my story, if you please. If Jesus Sunanda is at court in our castle in Scotland, he wears his hair orange. If he is in the underground city in China, his hair is blue-black. If he is holding court in the Grand Canyon Citadel, his hair ranges from reddish-brown to plain black. If he is holding court off-world, his hair can be
any color he wants.
Even cherry red, green, pink, or purple, whatever his heart desires. He is unlike other Nordics. Jesus Sunanda can change his hair color at will. He is not like an angel. He can't be a chunky monkey Eskimo one day and a 7-foot beanpole Bantu the next. Sunanda can only change his facial features slightly. The standard Nordics can't do that at all. And the elders of our race, towards the end of our lives, lose their great beauty and perfectly toned musculature. Our hair goes from beautiful blonde to plain white, and our skin turns a flaky, pasty white, and falls away like when one is sunburned. The elders of our race have always known Jesus Sunanda, and if he gets old, he hibernates, and a century or so later, he returns young again. We cannot do that. As for our clothing, I will explain that for you, Sister Villo, and for you, Lightworker, Kazoo. Sigluna explained the difference between the young and the old among Nordics, and the difference in the properties of the blue Nordic traveling uniform and the elders' robes. Young Nordics, once they have reached the age of maturity, wear the one-piece blue traveling uniforms. Both Heinrich and his sister Sigluna had worn their famous blue traveling uniforms to the evening's seminar. Stronger than Kevlar, the blue uniforms can withstand incredible ranges of temperature, both hot and cold. Electricity cannot pierce it or shock the wearer. Acid cannot harm it. It is very light, breathes, and is skin tight, outlining in stark detail any body structure. They are a one-size-fits-all garment, and once donned, they will shrink until they reach the perfect fit. The garment will increase in size following a tug on any of the dark blue hems for quick and easy removal. They are also self-cleaning. The garment only protects from elemental and projectile weapons on direct hits to the uniform. If, for example, the blast hits an exposed area, the Nordic will take full damage. When Nordics become old, around the 10,000-year mark, body structure begins a slow decay. The muscles become saggy, their hair turns white, their organs begin to fail, and their skin hardens and begins to molt. The molt looks like the peeling of old skin following a sunburn. Without a symbiote, Nordics will live only a few thousand years. Their pre-corruption demons, while similar to modern demons in many ways, have different abilities. One of those special abilities is to prolong the life and health of their host. Strangely, the ancient order of demons considered the fat of humanoids to be a delicacy. They absorbed most of it and received a high, not unlike one may receive from digesting certain mushrooms or toking weed. The ancient order of pre-corruption demons, fewer in number in present times than modern demons, are also able to increase certain abilities or give their hosts special powers. These powers far surpass the supernatural giftings of the modern species of demonkind, who are products of the dead angel-human hybrids of the Genesis 6 and later incursions. When that time arrives, Elder Nordics begin to wear elders' robes. As a part of ancient tradition, the blue uniform must be traded in to receive the elders' robes. The reason given for the mandatory exchange, whether true or false, was that wearing both garments at once kept both garments from operating and generated a burning heat onto the skin of the wearer. Elders' robes are not bulletproof, laser-proof, lightning-proof, or pierce-resistant like the blue uniforms. Elders' robes vary in color and are usually solid rather than mixed. They look a great deal like the robes worn by elderly Jedi warriors from the famous Star Wars movies. Elders' robes will resist environmental changes to a small degree. For example, one could travel for several hours through a blizzard or across a desert, and unless one becomes physically overexerted, their bodies would maintain a comfortable temperature. Elders' robes are also very efficient tools for disguise,
as their most important quality is to camouflage its wearer. When the young wish to travel incognito, or the older Nordic wishes to disguise the fact that the natural beauty and muscular tone has seeped from their bodies, they will often wear their elder's robes and keep
the large, loose hood up,
around, and over their faces. While one cannot see from the outside through the fabric of an elder's robe, one can see just fine while looking through the inner side of such a garment. Sigluna explained that her brother had a slight hint of gray beginning to show at his temples. Much to her delight, Heinrich snorted, folded his arms across his chest, and chin elevated, shifted his body away from the group. When Sigluna added that she didn't think Heinrich would make 2 or 3 centuries before he would have to trade in his blue uniform, he spat.
"I am not that old yet, sister dear. I won't get any gray hairs for thousands of years. You are just trying to goad me. Because I snapped at you for your careless and improper erotic revelations concerning Sunanda Jesus in front of our present company."
Sigluna smirked and ignored her brother as she shared a few more trivial snippets about Jesus Sunanda. She confided that he usually wore his blue uniform when he was holding court in the German castle, and his hair was blonde and longer than he maintained for other guises. Most other times he wore elder's robes in the other castles and underground citadels, and while off-world, and kept his hair, whatever the color, at about top of the shoulder length. Following Heinrich's retort to his sister about her
disparaging
comment concerning his great age and almost being old enough to be an elder of their race, Kazu asked if Willow had any questions. Kazu said that she had a question for Heinrich and Sigluna about reincarnation and wanted to share for a few minutes for Willow about advanced lightworker responsibilities. Kazu shared for about 15 minutes. Heinrich waxed eloquent about reincarnation for twice as long. Sigluna animatedly presented for about 20 minutes about the proper use of crystal magic. Suddenly, Heini began to tilt his head back at a strange angle, and a blank look crossed his face. Kazu jumped up and down in her lounge chair like an excited toddler, grasped Willow's arm, and exclaimed in a whisper, "This is exciting! Heini only does that when Daz is about to speak!" Willow did not realize that Heini was performing a transmedium presentation, which was considered scripturally an abominable practice that carried a death sentence in the Old Testament. Sigluna exclaimed, "Get ready, Sister Willow. This will be quite the adventure. I hope my Ascended Master Sophia will share later tonight as well." Ram Dass began speaking in an affected, gruff European voice that was totally unlike his host's smooth, musical sentences, with their German accent laced with occasional German phrases uttered by his host, Heini. While Heinrich did not share his sister's propensity to pronounce W's as V's and TH's as Z's, occasionally he used German words like Fräulein and Schweinhund. If one listened carefully to Sigluna, she would at times forget her linguistic stage act and skip the V or Z diction. Daz intoned, "Lightworker Willow, I have a special delicate assignment for you. The real Jesus, not the fake Jesus who has been harassing you as of late, wishes to speak with you again. He will meet you in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, day after tomorrow at about noon in the park near the bridge in front of the carnival area. I will show you the place with a mental picture. If the snow is too high, Willow, there will be a path made for you." Willow saw a summer picture in her mind, even though the season was winter. Daz continued after showing her the picture. "He will lay hands on you. You will hold your bobblehead Jesus crystal, and the man will give you your assignment and empower you to fulfill it." Both Heine and Kazu oohed and aahed after Daz had went silent. Sigluna did not seem to be as impressed with Daz's pronouncement. They all congratulated Willow, shared a toast, and then quaffed a few more drinks and ordered in a
vegan-style
family platter from the hotel's five-star restaurant. They all chatted concerning a wide range of subjects. Sigluna hoped that Sophia would share a word with them as well, but without anyone saying anything, once a bit over an hour had passed, and the first chimes of midnight were cold and still, Heinrich thanked Kazu for hosting the evening seminar, suggested the meeting be adjourned, and said he was ready to take a long nap. Sigluna agreed, happily hugged her new sister, Willow, conveyed her thanks to Kazu, and followed her brother to the exit. Willow thanked Kazu and left for her room as well. Just before exiting the conference room, Sigluna said,
"Please, brother dear, you may go on without me. I will tip the bartender."
Heinrich paused and raised an eyebrow, but said nothing and continued his exit from the conference room. Sigluna slinked her way up to the bar, smiled a dazzling smile at bartender Finnegan, winked, and handed him her spare plastic room card. Finnegan bowed, and in a rather dazed fashion replied,
"As you wish, Madam Sigluna."
The bartender examined the card briefly, placed it in his shirt pocket, and without closing the conference room bar or cleaning it, quickly exited ahead of Sigluna and walked towards the number he had read on the card, opened the door, shut it, stepped ahead a few paces, and waited. Not moving a muscle, Finnegan stood confused, then removed his clothing in the darkness of the overly air-conditioned hotel room and shivered dutifully, waiting for his Nordic temptress to join him. Sigluna turned around, left the bar, and walked over to the conference host. Willow had made her exit, so the Lady Nordic spoke quietly with Lightworker Kazu briefly, and then headed to her room, wondering if Finnegan, the bartender, had made it there successfully, or was standing still as a statue somewhere else in the huge hotel, with a blank look on his face, waiting for more directions, not even able to answer who he was, where he lived, or what he was doing. If Finnegan had been a Christian, his resistance to the Nordic siren's charms would have blocked the beguilement, unless he had a sin weakness in that area, or if he had not been a Christian, but not prone to seeking illicit sexual activity. Within several minutes of his exit from the conference room, there would have been a strong possibility that his mind would have resisted, perhaps even successfully. Since just the opposite was the case, Finnegan's enamored state remained for hours, and he willingly acquiesced to Sigluna's mental command to go to her room, strip, and await her appearance. Within 24 hours, Finnegan would remember everything except what had happened a few hours before and after his meeting with Sigluna. His reward for involuntarily betting the Nordic female after being side-charmed by her was countless bites, scratches, carpet burns, and bruises that would heal over time. Since his mysterious disappearance and abandonment of the bar were considered inexcusable behavior by his boss, their next meeting did not go well. Finnegan's hell hath no fury like a woman-scorned employer, a very jealous and hot-tempered Hispanic lady, a former model who had decided that a move into hotel management would be a boon to her career, had terminated him on the spot. Well-manicured hands with long lavender nails, gesturing wildly, she spewed a horrid torrent of Spanish expletives in front of Finnegan and the pair of security guards who had found him wandering the hotel, dazed and naked in the wee hours of the morning. Finnegan's former Latin lover knew, too well, the look of love bites, and had recently given Finnegan a few herself. He had been given a clean sheet from a nearby housekeeper's closet and escorted from the building to his car. One of the guards who knew him gave Finnegan written directions to his home, which he could not remember. The guard only knew directions to Finnegan's house on the bay because he had met him there before they had cruised the clubbing strip a few weeks previously, seeking inebriated college girls. The security guard had also given Finnegan the spare car keys that all employees were required to keep in the security office in case an employee's vehicle had to be moved during an emergency.